how I got into red light therapy. My wife introduced me to it with a very large lamp. It was like a lamp that you would have like on a desk, but it was very ugly. It was an very ugly, cumbersome, very hard to use, difficult to navigate kind of a lamp. It had like four different arms that would move around in a very large red bulb. And I used that to rehab my knee, which actually was always troubling me until I started using the lamp. So after about a week, I didn't have that pain that I was used to. And then after 2 weeks, I stopped using the lamp. And that's kind of what triggered my interest into what red light therapy was and the sort of the game-changing benefits that it can give, not just for pain, but for all these other human conditions.
Hello, I'm John Brink, and we are podcasting On the Brink from downtown Prince George, British Columbia, Canada. And for all those people that are wondering and saying, okay, I know British Columbia, I know Canada, where is Prince George? Well, it is about 500 miles north of Vancouver, or for our friends in Europe, 800 kilometers. It is in the center of British Columbia. It's north to south, east to west, exactly in the center. So British Columbia, big province, beautiful, beautiful province, lots of nature and all those things. Today, a very special guest. His name is John Graham. He's a certified master trainer, a speaker, and a fitness professional. Has had 15 years of experience in the fitness industry and is very up to date on a number of issues. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate the introduction. And I love the show. It's On the Brink. And so your name is Brink. So I like that that tie-in. That's nice. So yeah, happy to be on the Brink.
And interestingly enough, we both have a complicated first name, John.
Yeah. That's it. Common name everyone knows. And, it's like, oh, you're another John. So I've always gone by John Graham. Everybody's kind of sort of called me that. But my full name is John Graham. But for some reason, John Harper never stuck. Everyone just went with John Graham, and that's it. That's kind of become my handle now. John
now,
Graham.
The interesting part about me is that I was born in Holland, and we'll talk about that a little bit later, northeastern Holland, and I was 23 when I came to Canada. But I was born, my name is Jan, J-A-N. I was born with that. But every time when I first came here, became a cleanup man, a lumber pilot, and all those, and they said, oh, yeah, hey, what's your name? I said, Jan. I said, hey, John, how are you doing? And so everybody called me John, and so it became John. I said, okay, but whatever, right?
You're Dutch, so happy King's Day. It's coming.
Oh, thank you.
It's tomorrow, right?
Yes.
King's Day?
Yes. Thank you. So, John, you have an interesting background. Tell us about it.
So I guess my, a good place to start is, I guess, me as a skinny young boy that was white, with red hair, freckles, not very confident, right? And I wanted to build confidence. I wanted to, feel secure in myself. So I found the gym, that sort of became my church, my place of peace. And I started to, grow in confidence as I was growing muscle.
So how old were you then? Where were you born?
Oh, where I was born. Wow. Okay. So yeah, the story is going to get more complex. So I was born in India. I have an
India.
Australian passport.
Oh
yep.
My God.
I've been quite an international, but more Californian accent, I guess. Boots on the ground. Most time I've ever spent in a country is actually China. Which is where all my manufacturing is done for my product.
Okay.
And that's where my wife is from. So a little bit of everywhere. I'm all over the place.
So now you're in California, though.
No, right now I'm in China. But in about 2 weeks, I'll go back to Miami, which is where I'm based in the U.S., where our office is.
Okay, and where are you in China? Is it Beijing or where?
No, just Shenzhen, just across from Hong Kong. Like, we can pretty much see Hong Kong from the window.
Okay.
Yeah, that's majority of all technology, all anything product-wise to do with tech is usually is in the world is made in this area.
So the interesting part about this is that I look at your bio, and the one thing that I forgot to—it's something close to my heart. I'm an entrepreneur. You are also an entrepreneur extraordinaire in a number of different products, and you will explain all of that to us too. But I just want to take you back. I think, although you said it becomes more complex, but it becomes more interesting because India, Australia. China, all those connections are interested for our guests because they all had an impact and still likely do on your life and who you are.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I think where I kind of found my happy place in the gym and I began my fitness journey, which later became very much my career and is still very much my career. It was probably around 16, 16, 17 is when I sort of started training, started getting into sports, wanting to get competitive and actually compete. I trying to find that identity as a as an athlete. So first and foremost, I went with rugby because that obviously is what an Australian should do is either play cricket, rugby, or surf. And I'm terrible at cricket I found quite boring, but rugby was good impact. You get a it's good camaraderie with the team. Everyone goes out for
Very
beer.
physical though, right?
It's an aggressive
Very
sport.
for, but for a skinny guy with red hair and speckles, my God.
Was not good.
No.
I needless to say, I had some very serious injuries, which I learned from now, like looking up from where I am right now, that it was injuries that definitely made me better, made me stronger, made me wiser. But yeah, I had both my shoulders blown from rugby, which then meant, no more rugby. I had to stop doing that. And I went into CrossFit and I tried to get very competitive with CrossFit. And this is at a time when I think CrossFit was quite trendy to be involved with. And if you know CrossFit, it's basically gym exercise, but it's like in a sport format. It's sort of you have a scoreboard, you have like your you put your score and you compete with people that do scores, but it's all gym exercise, right?
In a group setting, right? So and
That's right.
managed and then they keep score of it so you can see your progression. And so it's
Yeah.
I've been very involved in the gym, but not so much in CrossFit, but I know what it is.
Yeah, it is fun and it is definitely rewarding for someone who I think paced themselves. But I was very focused on the competitive side of CrossFit and competing. You go from regionals, to and you go to different levels, and you're of course trying to get into the games. You're trying to get into the
Now,
world
the other part
championship.
about the gym is physical exercise so important, but to find the motivation in going is that I always say I've been like you 15 years involved in the gym and all of those kind of things. But I always say is that we all make commitments. So we end of the year we say we're going to do this, that, and then we're going to buy a membership to the gym, and then within 2 weeks we find 100 reasons as why we can't go anymore. Now, CrossFit, that I kind of look at it as I think it is good in a group setting, but even more importantly, at least in my mind, it creates a feeling of obligation to go because you're part of that team and you're looking at the scoreboard. So that is the other part that is the benefit of CrossFit to a lot of people.
Yeah, it's that community. You're part of like a family, a fellowship of people that all want to, achieve. And then, but and the way you achieve and way you make yourselves better is doing CrossFit workouts. But it's at the end of it, it's all about that camaraderie, right? Bringing people together to all cheer each other on, in a
Exactly.
CrossFit workout.
So
Yeah,
then
and
you, so where
it was
did you
fun.
go from there?
But yeah, like CrossFit, when you go and you compete and you try to really get on a high level, it can be very demanding physically. And it had it was very taxing on my knees and especially my left knee. I had a very nasty injury that I had to deal with, which took me out. I left CrossFit because of my left knee injury. And then I went into amateur boxing.
But you're looking for punishment, John, because is it psychological? It's saying, please beat me up.
It was something where I needed I needed impact sports, you know, something that really was, I enjoyed the rivalry, this idea of like not just competing with others, but also competing with yourself, that intensity. And looking back, being older and wiser now, at least I hope I am, I was quite young and aggressive and just one of those, you know, don't say no, kind of just a hard-headed person that was maybe a bit too much of a hot shot. But it got me into trouble. It got me injured, you know. So after the shoulders in rugby, the knee in CrossFit, just doing boxing for a number of years, I started to get headaches, very serious headaches. And I would have like a certain point, like right here, it would really hurt. Then it would be on the back of my head.
Right.
It would be at different points on my head. I would have these very sharp headaches.
So and it would signal that something was not right, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, yeah.
You should really stop taking the beats against the knees. Had it already, your arms and your shoulders. The head was next, right?
That's right. Yeah, that was all that was left. So... going and getting a scan, the doctor told me that I developed a tumor in my head.
Oof.
And it was caused by micro traumas to the front of my nose.
Right.
So I was like, oh, you know, is this serious? And he said, well, it's not like a benign tumor. It is growing into your brain. So we need to get rid of it quickly because it's going to get more difficult to pull it out, you know, as it gets larger and goes into your brain. And it ended up being about the size of my, you know, my thumb. It was about that big.
Yeah.
But so after that surgery, he just said, best not to do any impact sports. Nothing, don't, you know, collide yourself with other human beings. So that's when I guess, mindset-wise, I sort of started to take a shift and start to reevaluate sort of my aggressive personality and try to look more as into wellness, into recovery. And that's kind of what brought me into where I am now, which is in red light therapy.
Well, obviously, physically, you had nothing left to put at risk anymore because you did it all already. So you had to saying, okay, now I'm a good example for fixing things in some form. You obviously didn't like the traditional way of saying, okay, what do you got? Oh, we'll take aspirins and we'll take this and we'll fix that and we have another... chemical of some sort or another that may or may not do this, that, or the other thing, and before you know it, you fix some things and you create 10 other ones.
That's right. You start creating more problems than you had before. Right.
Right.
But yeah, the how I got into red light therapy, my wife introduced me to it with a very large lamp. It was like a lamp that you would have like on a desk, but it was very ugly. It was an very ugly, cumbersome, very hard to use, difficult to navigate kind of a lamp. It had like four different arms that would move around in a very large red ball. And I used that to rehab my knee, which actually was always troubling me until I started using the lamp. So after about a week, I didn't have that pain that I was used to. And then after 2 weeks, I stopped using the lamp. And that's kind of what triggered my interest into what red light therapy was and the sort of the game-changing benefits that it can give, not just for pain, but for all these other human conditions. That's where I was with red light therapy.
Right. So we'll talk about it a lot more about red light therapy because I had not heard about it before. So, but the other part that I say is I had knee injuries. Okay, I give you a little bit of background on myself. That I was born in northeastern Holland in 1940, so I'm in my 84th year, And that was during the war years that were rough for us in that part of Holland, especially the winter of 1944-45 was the hunger winter, but also the coldest winter on record. And my dad was drafted into the Dutch army, and the last time they heard from him was that he was caught in Rotterdam when the center of Rotterdam was bombed. And for 5 years, we wouldn't know if he was dead or alive. And my mother had, I was the last one. He had, I had a sister 1 year older, a brother 2 years older. And every morning we would go in the winter of 44, 45, we would go to the railroad yards with gunny sacks, pick up anything edible or burnable. And I still can feel, even now, nearly 70 years later, I can still feel the feeling of hunger. And then the cold, immense cold. We only had a little stove that we could heat in a little part of our house. And I could still feel that part of it. And then anxiety of losing the parent, the only parent that we had, and everybody around us had the same issues. Got counseling for the inner child, actually. And then we were liberated by the Canadian Army April the 12th, 1945. And it left such an impression on me that I always knew from that point forward I would go to the land of my heroes, Canada. And I wanted to go when I was 17, and then I was drafted in the Dutch Air Force. And so then finally I left Holland and came to Canada, and with one suitcase, two books, two sets of clothes, and very little money. And I wanted to build a lumber mill and start right from the ground up. And the same time, what happened to me on the medical side is that I had...
That's a story.
Everybody gets a trigger that motivates them to kind of look at themselves physically. Where am I going? What am I doing? And in 2008, I was then 58 years old, and I got a case of diverticulitis. And that was, for those people that may not be familiar with what it is, I would say if you have pain on your right side, it likely is the, and I'm not a doc, obviously, but it's likely the appendix. If you have it on your left side, then it's your colon potentially, and it could well be diverticulitis. And in my case, usually what they do, if you have that, then they recommend more greens, look at your diet, what you're doing, blah, blah, blah. In my case, it was a rupture. And then you have the toxins go through your mid body, and it starts attacking healthy organs. And you have about 48 hours before it becomes very, very serious. So I got an operation that took 20 centimeters out of my colon. And then, but what it did, it triggered me. I came, the doc said the following day, you came this close, you know, because I had a high threshold for pain. I didn't go quickly enough to attend to it. Very, very painful, actually. And then I said, I'm going to have to do something. My wife is vegetarian. She wanted me usually go in that direction. I did some, but not as much as I should have. And I started looking at diet, and then the same after I had recovered in 2009. I bought, in sincerity, I went to the gym, got a trainer, and started training, cleaned up my diet, and started looking at myself at a late age, and then started training with the trainer in a serious way. Whatever I do, I give it all that I got. That's what I do. And, you know, so then after about 6-7 years, and now I was well into my late 60s already, somebody came up to us when I was training and said, have you ever thought about competing? I said, me? Yeah. And I said, you know, because I was starting to look pretty good. And I said, why not? So that's what I did. I started getting ready to compete. And now I was into my early 70s already, and started compete bodybuilding physique in Northern BC, came in second in bodybuilding, third in physique, that qualified me for the provincials, came in third in bodybuilding, second in physique, that qualified me for the nationals and the Arnolds. And I said, yay, you know. So then obviously COVID came, And so I still stayed active, but not like I had before. And now again, at nearly 84, I'm training again in a serious way for the Arnolds in 2025, and I'm 85. I think I'm the oldest competitive bodybuilder in North America. I show you, I'm also an author like you are. I'm going to show you a picture of the book. Living Young,
Good job.
Dying Old.
I know.
It's coming out in July. And so that's kind of where I'm at. And so today I'm fit. I'm getting ready for the gym and always and in a serious way looking at health. The other thing that we are doing, my wife in particular involved in it, looking at not conventional medicine, but more in looking, being proactive, understanding more about who you are, your body, and then looking at more proactive other therapies that are available rather than, following, but being ahead of issues and problems.
That's right. Functional medicine, right? This is
correct.
You know, something that's, it's good that all of this knowledge is coming now, and it's all from the past. I mean, what our great, great ancestors were all using, we're now bringing it forward. So it's fantastic.
And so that is the trend. And that's why it is so interesting to have you on my podcast, because precisely the issues that you are talking about are the ones that are very much in the mind of a lot of people. And we can see it on YouTube and in all the other areas where the issues are getting more to the foreground and saying, what can we do, being more proactive and understanding these precious bodies that we have that will take lot of abuse, but only so much. And then you have to start looking at it and saying, what can we do to stay? It's not about age. Age is just a number, but it is a quality of life that counts in the long term.
That's right. And being able to do all the great things you're doing. You're competing at your age. There are some people that are like in their early 20s that are not nearly as robust and competitive as you. So it's exactly what it's about. Age is just a number. It's about being able to live life to the fullest and being able to compete when you're in your 80s. You know what? I'm going to do this. You're me when I grow up. Let's go. Let's get it.
And so what I say, John, I want to be 120. And so that's what I'm doing. And that hence the book, Living Young, Dying Old. But the other part that is important is, from my perspective, is that there was a trigger for me that happened in 2008. And then from 2009 forward, I've always been involved in fitness like you have. And then I'm goal-oriented like you are. And I like to have a goal to work towards. And that is first and foremost, understanding my body. My wife has been very helpful in that process. So I call myself vegan, so I usually say 80-20 area, and I'm so very cautious about what I eat. Actually, I do all the shopping. If I go to the grocery store, I don't go to the center. I usually stay on the outside. I don't look too much at processed foods because I don't know what is in it. So, and I stay organic, plant-based, and then at the same time, physically, it's important. And the other part I want to urge people is not, I'm not saying that you have to become an Olympian in order do what I do is competitive. At least stay fit. And even if you walk 20 minutes, half an hour a day, it's doable for anybody, but become informed on what is going on. Hence, having you in the podcast with the red light theory is very, very important. So,
yes. Yeah, so like red light. So I can show you the device that I've built. So red light, red light, it comes from the sun.
Right.
It's first time it's been used or documented use goes back to Greek times. Right. Early on, before, I mean, everyone likes to say like red light therapy started to gain traction when NASA was using it to grow plants in space. And then the astronauts saw that it was healing abrasions on their skin. And that's where it kind of started to take off. But actually, much earlier on, it was being used, even in the medical world, by some very niche doctors. I guess doctors that weren't necessarily very mainstream or credited as being, you know, actual doctors. But they would use like, it was like copper wire, and they would burn it, which would give off light, and had a healing benefit. But yeah, it's true that most people sort of credit red light therapy to getting traction was from NASA, and then it went into beauty, and then it's been in medical. It was like the laser guns that some doctors use to accelerate wound healing. You know, if you have deep cuts or like if you've been in a fight and there's bruising on your face, usually the reason why red light helps is because it naturally boosts collagen in your skin. So that's where you see the red light, the masks, you know, the LED masks that you see on TikTok now, all the girls are wearing, and they do these TikTok videos, and the husband or the boyfriend is like, oh my god, look at my girlfriend, she's Iron Man or something. It's like, right. That's all light therapy, right?
That all fits into category of non-invasive means, right?
Yes. Oh, because it's light, right? It's from the sun. It's just getting different nanometers that are available to us from the sun and putting them into an LED chip. And that chip is programmed to produce that same nanometer as the, you know, red or infrared.
So can you show us the light once more that you have there? So that would be one that is manufactured by your group. And so that if somebody wants to have a light like that, you could use it on your entire body, right? Yep. And so it's non-invasive. It's a whole different approach, you know. So, and so how does that fit with what my wife is doing and what we are doing is the PFMF. So that is pulsive electronic magnetic frequencies.
We are in the same space when it comes to recovery, but they're just different applications. They're both using in conjunction, you can really do good work for a broken body with a lot of disease.
I'm excited about this, so sorry if I keep interrupting you, but I find exciting about it is because we are doing that as we speak. You know, so my wife is using that, and she was very interested when I indicated to her that I was going to have you on my podcast. So but my understanding is about what we are doing and what you already referred to it. PFMF is interesting, and obviously red light falls in the same category. My understanding was that when astronauts came back from space, is that the problem they had is to how to reintroduce the muscle and they recover the muscles, and that's where it started. The technology, at least as it applied to what I mentioned, came from, really. And so and then already, as you indicated, long before that, way before that, it already was introduced. The interesting part about it is that it's not invasive, and so it's a new approach that is getting more and more attention around the world. And obviously, you and me talking about it in our podcast, that's why it is so important.
Yeah, I mean, I hope everyone can. I call it the red light train. I want everybody to get on the red light train. Like it's natural. It's non-invasive. It's from the sun, right? The optimal time for us to get red and infrared light is at sunrise and sunset. That's when the light is at the right length to be able to penetrate your skin and activate your mitochondria. So The light therapy is mitochondrial health. It's dealing with an issue. It's on a cellular level. So when I always talk about light therapy, red light therapy, I try to talk a lot about the pain management solution that it provides, because I feel that this is the big game changer in the world. I know red light therapy can make your skin look more beautiful, help your wrinkles, help your pimples. It can grow your hair, it can boost your testosterone. It can boost your body's SPF levels. There's many benefits that red light therapy can provide. But where I feel people will start to take notice and invest in a device, it doesn't necessarily have to be my device, Lumiflex. It could be a device that you would find just in your local store or whatever's available on Amazon. But we all need to raise the awareness of photobiomodulation, which is the medical term for red light therapy. We need to raise the awareness and get people to start trying it. And once they start trying it, that trust will come, and then the whole industry will be raised, and people will start to use this treatment instead of using drugs and invasive means of management, of pain management.
So yeah, but what's interesting in particular is that we already have been involved with PEMF, in the same category, and again, I'm not a doc. I'm not promoting anything like this. I don't. Other than I've seen amazing results, not only in my life but my wife's. Our dogs, we have 7 horses, and we apply it to them. It has an effect, and I have to be careful. I'm not a dog. I'm not a vegetarian, but it does have results, and it is worthy of checking it out. Now, with your light, tell us about your company now. You're manufacturing that in China. How is it available to people saying, I'm interested in purchasing that?
Yeah, it's just go to lumaflex.com. Luma meaning light, flex, like flexible, because it's a flexible panel. Right. So it can wrap around joints and muscles. But yeah, I'm based in Miami. That's where the head office is. Manufacturing is in China. We've got lots of distributors all over the world. Actually, we have an office in The Hague. So I have Dutch partners. I get along so well with Dutch. I have so many Dutch friends. I was in Amsterdam for a big biohacking event last year, and it was probably the best event that I've done for like B2C sales. Like, when you do an event, you have an exhibit and everybody comes to look at your product. Yeah. At that event in Amsterdam, like I remember I sold out first day. And I had to ask my one of my guys, I said, drive to the office and get more units. Bring them here tomorrow because we don't have anything. But yeah, I had a wonderful time in Amsterdam. It was a great, that was sort of like the official launch in Europe, you could say, for Lumiflex. But yeah, lumaflex.com.
How long ago was that, John, that you were?
So I've been in developing this product because it was quite a difficult product to build with all the features, the specs and everything. So a little, almost 3 years in development, but it's been about 9 months launched, only 9 months launched. We're still pretty new, but yeah, I guess because in the category of portable devices, I kind of have taken that as and been the top one in that category. Of course, you can buy very large devices like panels or beds or devices like a red and infrared light therapy sauna. It's like a sauna that comes with red light therapy. I was focused on portable devices. It's something that people could, put into their bag and use on the go anytime, anywhere. That was sort of where I thought, the most benefit could come to the world. With red light therapy, is not having to drive to a place or, I left it at home. It's like, no, it's in your bag. You can use it now. You can just aim at the pain. You've got a sore shoulder, put it at the shoulder. Sore neck, got a headache.
Right.
So that was, that's what I've taken. It's more the portable category in red light therapy.
Amazing. So I know already I need to get access to them, so I will contact you afterwards about that. But you know, it's complementary to what we are already doing as a family, and my wife be very excited about it. So that's the business that you started. So the and so you're successful now. Your base is your commercial base is Miami, and so what are you doing physically? You're still going to the gym and you're a speaker. You know, so tell me about those kind of things.
Yeah, I mean, personally, in order for me to function well on the business to where I believe I can offer the most amount of value to my staff, where I'm on point, you know, I'm making good decisions, you know, the company is growing, I definitely need to have my gym time. I need to exercise because, you know, just being that young kid that was skinny, you know, that wasn't confident, I built my confidence in the gym, and that's kind of like my place of peace. It's like the place that I'm in control over, and I can win in the gym. Whereas in business, you know, sometimes you're up and sometimes you're down. Sometimes there's a deal you're about to, you know, to lock, but then it falls through, right? But if that happens, and I don't want my moods to be like this, I'll go to the gym and I'll always win at the gym, and then I transfer that over to the business. Yeah, like you, I did a bit of bodybuilding last year. I did quite well. I did 4 competitions. And now I look and I'm like, I'm not healthy. I've been having too much whining and dining with clients. And I'm like,
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, you know, to get back into the regime and maybe compete, get on the stage at the end of this year. Because I get sort of some formal, I get like the routine transfers over to the business, and then also I can commercialize it for the business, you know, CEO getting on stage.
Yeah. And that's what it is, right? Like both you and me now, since 2009, I've been in the gym, competitive and all of those things for 15 years. And obviously I had competition. Even if I have a bit of a pause in between during COVID, I still maintain my muscle tone. I still know the routine, and I love the gym. You know, and so for some people, going to the gym is hard mentally and that, but once it becomes part of your life, then all of a sudden it becomes part of who you are, and it stimulates and gives you confidence. And that is so important. You know, initially when I went to the gym before 2009, when I nearly died and I knew I had to do something about diet and physical fitness. Before that, if I would go to the gym, all those guys walking around like they were, and I'd walk in there and say, oh my God, I don't even know how to sit on the equipment. And I always felt that everybody's pointing at me and saying, what is he doing here? Which is not so, it's just the opposite. Yeah. But you know how it goes. And then, I'm well past that, obviously. And then now it's become part of my life. You know, living young, dying old is so important. Even in my mid-80s, I'm still competing. And they say, I take offense to that, or sometimes get pissed off being blunt about it. When I hear on the radio or the television sets or CNN, and those guys say, if you're 80 or older than that, you're done. You need a nurse to hold your hand. You're falling over. I said, no. And I say, if I go to the gym, I have a lot of people in their 20s and 30s and saying, my God, look at this guy. What is he doing? And I'm not taking chemicals or any of that kind of stuff, just hard work. And, you know, but at the end of the of the story is you see so many people, the last 10 years of their life are not pleasant. And simply because, you know, your body is immensely forgiving. It's an immensely amazing thing, actually, that will take a certain amount of abuse, and then it cannot do it any longer. And then, obviously, things become difficult. But a lot of it is up here. right? And saying, you know, I want quality of life. I want to, you know, look good, and I want to feel good, and quality of life. It's 84, 85. That's just a number.
That's right. 84, 85. And in the gym competing or getting into contest prep, I think that's absolutely wonderful. That is like, well, that's just, that will be me. Like I said, you've really kind of encouraged me to have that as a good goal to work for in my future. Because that's, I mean, there's, when you compete and you're healthy, you don't really care about many other sort of, I mean, other successes are great if it's family, you know, like kids, all this.
Sure.
But not much else compares to just having a good, solid, healthy life. Like, you're just like, nah, I'm good. I've got
everything. That's what it is all about, you know. And now the other part that I have is, you know, is that academically I was not a success story. You know, I failed grade 3 and I failed grade 7 3 times. And then they said, what are we going to do with this guy? You know, my parents were beautiful people in Holland. And he said, other people said, send him to the mentally challenged school. And he said, no, we're not going to do that. So we'll get him, we'll teach him a trade. And so my dad was in the lumber, my grandfather was a master carpenter. So they sent me to a furniture factory. And when I was 13. And so I loved furniture making and I learned a lot. And you know, so even all the kids, you know, were going on holidays on Friday. And then obviously I again failed grade 7. So my dad had a friend that had a closing store. So they took me to the store on the Sunday following the school came out. All my friends were on holidays. And I got fitted for 3 pairs of coveralls. Now, I was relatively small, so the coveralls, we had to roll them up several times. The crotch was hanging at my knees, which is modern today. It wasn't then. And so yeah, I became a furniture maker.
That's a pile, right? But back then, no.
But I knew, you know, that I never felt good about myself. I always knew there was something. I was as smart as everybody else. I was very good at writing. I was very good at numbers. I was not very good sitting in school and listening to stuff that I thought was boring. So I lived in a different world. It was not until I was in 1997, I was already here for 32 years and had already successful businesses all around me. And everybody said, oh, you're so successful. I didn't feel that way. And I still felt that there was something that I didn't feel good about. And so I walked into a bookstore and by coincidence, I picked up a book and the book's title was Driven to Distraction by Dr. Halliwell. And I opened that book and it was about something I'd never even heard of, ADHD. I said, oh my God, that's me. And I wrote in the book in Dutch, now I finally know who I am. And because I was ashamed of it, there was a lot of stigma about it. And especially when you're building companies and you go to banks and you're trying to borrow from them hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars, and then saying, this is the plan and this is the prospect and here's the business plan. And oh, by the way, I got a mental disorder, and saying, okay, have a nice day, right? So, you know, not now, but then. In any event, the more I found out about ADHD, then it took me 5 years to go to my doc, who had delivered our 2 daughters and was a personal friend, that I came into his office and I was then 62. And he said, hey, John, why are you here? I said, I think I got ADHD. And I do. And so so the more I found out about it, the more I felt I had to write about it. So I wrote a book about it, ADHD Unlocked.
Unlocked, okay.
Yes, very popular. And, you know, the interesting part about ADHD, frequency of occurrence, much higher than initially thought to be, around 8%. I did a Dr. Halliwell, also has written about 18 books, 5 on distraction, very, very popular globally. I had him on my podcast, You Are 244, this podcast. He's on 203, very interesting one to watch. him and me talked about it and some of the things. So I said to him that I believe that initially that 8% of the population was probably ADHD, but I believe now that it is probably 20% or more. He said, no, John, it's more than 25%. And and then the other thing I said to him is that I believe that most of the successful entrepreneurs, and the operative is successful, entrepreneurs and CEOs are ADHD, more than 50%, I said. He said, no, John, more than 75%. And I agree with him.
Really?
It's a superpower.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I like the way you've said it like that, because it turns, it makes it positive, you know?
Exactly. That's very good. What I do today is that probably have 10 different companies. They are successful. You know, the I'm working on 4 books. The first one that I did is Against All Odds. And I'll make sure I sign copies of it and I send them to you. And then the second one was ADHD. And then the other one that was very important is Finding Your Passion, Living the Dream. And then obviously the one that's coming out in July is this one, Living Young, Dying Old.
Yeah.
And so
I like that.
A lot of people say to me, how do you do all these things? You know, and then I'm a very active podcaster and writing books, 10 companies and doing all the other. How do you do all of that? I said, ADHD. It's a superpower. And so I give people encouragement that, you know, that to understand ADHD and then understand the benefits of it, where it allows you to focus on areas, other areas, traditional learning, sitting in a school for months and years, listening to stuff that really doesn't help you or interest you. And I'm a believer in what they call micro certification. Find the core issue that somebody wants to be trained in or has a dream of becoming knowledgeable in, and then add to that the other components. For people that have challenges of the traditional learning system, and that is not only ADHD but also trauma, you know, that the teaching system has to change and is already changing to a certain extent, of being more knowledgeable and more helpful to people that are not used to the system the way it exists and is now in the process of changing, I believe.
Yes. Yeah, because the world's changing. I mean, everybody's brains are changing because we're all, I mean, the world's changing. I mean, look how impactful social media is. I mean, that definitely is a key component. The rise in like ADHD levels just in the world, right? Just things move
in the things that you're talking about, the medical system, you know, and you are a lot in the States and in China and the other places, but here in Canada, we have real challenges with the medical, traditional medical system. Docs are simply not available. And then other people are the traditional, you know, the being medicated with chemicals of all these different sorts. We have to be more proactive, A, understand our bodies, then understand that it is extremely important. Some of the elements, get enough sleep, you know, make sure that your diets are, that you understand your diet, and then get some exercise. You don't have to be like you and me, competitive in a number of things like you have been, and I am, you know, making it a challenge. In addition to that, at least walk 20 to 30 minutes a day, and then up in the mind, try to be, but I always said, you know, when I came off the bus here, when I went to Canada, I wanted to start from the ground up because I knew I could do it. I wanted to build a lumber mill and start with nothing. So, you know, when I flew into Montreal, took the train to Vancouver, my God, that's slow and it's a long way. 4 days, 5 nights. And then came off the train, bounced through the immigration office, and fortunately, I could speak English, didn't have a job, didn't know a soul. There was a fellow that spoke German, and I could speak some German. And I told him what I wanted to do. He said, Prince George, that's where you have to go, 500 miles north. And that's where the opportunity is, a boom town. So I came off the bus here 60 years ago, and I can still see the Greyhound station close by. And I had my suitcase, three books, and two sets of clothes, and I counted my money at least three times. I had exactly $25.47. But I had lots of is attitude. No matter how tough today is, I would swear it's a better day tomorrow. And I will not have anybody convince me otherwise. I avoid negative. I have a passion. Whatever I do, I give it 150%. And the other one is work ethic, is that I work harder than anybody. And even now at nearly 84, I get up at 5:30 in the morning. I always think I'm late, and I always make my bed. And then whatever happens in the day, I'm usually busy, busy, busy. I work 12, 14 hours a day, and I love it.
Wow, so many years. And you said you still saw the bus stop not too far away, right?
So yeah, about two, 3 blocks away from here where I'm sitting here in downtown Prince George. Wow. Yeah.
So that's quite an incredible history. You probably watched that town grow, right, and become what it is today, right? You've really seen
exactly that, John. It used to be what they call the boom town, and the question was usually, when did you get here and when are you leaving? It was just a town where you make money and then you're left. Not now. It has become quite a community. It's the center of Northern British Columbia. Amazing place to all the people that are watching us from around the world. If you go to Canada, Canada is a beautiful, beautiful country. And then go to British Columbia. Lower Mainland is beautiful. Vancouver, Victoria. But Northern BC in particular is nature. You know, that when I leave here, and I even within the city limits, I may see black bears, I may see deer, I may see all natural, the nature and living in harmony with the people that are here and the community in Northern BC. And it's the half of BC. Another 500 miles further north is the border with the Yukon. It's an amazing area. And a lot of times I fly around a lot, and commercially as well, do a lot of business in the United States. And if I fly through North America, I always sit by the window. I'm also a pilot, but when I fly commercially, sit by the window, I look outside and I say, it's paradise. It is paradise. And I hear these people bitching and complaining about this, that, and the other thing, and about democratic government. It's not perfect, but it's better than the alternative dictatorships. If you want to try it, go to Russia, go to North Korea, with all due respect, China to a certain extent, Iran, Venezuela, Cuba, and I can go on and on and on compared to what we have. I wouldn't want to trade with any of them, you know, so yeah.
That's right. So special for its nature, Canada, right? It's like the... It's something very, very unique. The game, right? The fishing, the bears, the snowboarding, all of that. It's a very unique thing about Canada. A lot of the Americans go up to Canada to enjoy the nature up there, right? It's a very...
And we love them because we are close to them. You know, we, for all intents and purposes, are one. Although politically, I wouldn't want to change with you, actually. You know, our political system is what I call boring. By yours, it's just the absolute opposite. And, you know, not to get too deeply into that, but saying it's like a little bit scary.
Like a talent show. Because it's always like the media, everything. It's like, oh, my God.
Oh, my God. So, John, be getting close to the end. Is I want to know more about the red light again. So it's available. Show us a website, you know, and all the things that our guests watching around the world should know about it. I'm, you know, you. As far as I'm concerned, it has proved itself already. So there is no question about that. I like that what my wife Sharon is doing is PMF, you know, falls in the same category. It is, something that is non-invasive medicine, if you wish, or approach. The results can be amazing and are amazing.
That's right. Yeah, we just need to inform more people about it, right? I mean, I always tell people just study about red light therapy. Just look at natural, non-invasive means of treatment and just open your mind. Except, just do your own research. Yeah. Go onto YouTube, type it out, start watching some videos. Exactly. Go onto Instagram, loads of great content on it. Make your own decision. And then, I mean, lumaflex.com for the portable device that I've got. But maybe you a device that you'll need a different device that suits you. There'll be a different application that suits your life. Exactly. You don't necessarily need to adapt to the application. Let the application adapt. There's many other products out there. I just focus on portable devices.
So the other part, John, that I find amazing in closing is that and as you are and a speaker and obviously have been proactive in communications with the world and all the places that you have been and have the history is that if I look today, at podcasting, where when I first started a number of years ago before COVID, doing blogging, interacting, and then started working with the local television station, doing some form of podcasting. And then COVID came, and all of a sudden saying, what do we do now? And then we decided, I have an apartment downtown Prince George. It said, let's turn it into a studio. And we did more than in the region, and we have an amazing amount of interesting people around here, but obviously we did so much that we had to become, I have another apartment in Vancouver, maybe I will turn that into another studio, and then say, why not virtual? And especially when we see now on television, there were lots of hiccups before, but now, there we are sitting here, and just for our guest watching us, that you are in China, right across from Hong Kong. I'm sitting in central British Columbia, and we have a dialogue about very interesting stuff about your life and your interesting life and doing what you're doing. And at the same time, me sharing with you and our guest the different approaches to life in general. And at the same time, if I'm a speaker, which I still do and like to do, it usually takes me a day or 2 days to do a presentation somewhere in the States. And I still like to do that. But podcasting, where you and me here for an hour have exchanged our views, we already know that tens of thousands of people will watch us. I know that. Yeah. And you know that. Yeah. And so that's the power of podcasting, and it's still on its infancy. So then at the same time, I urge those people that are watching us, to start looking to podcasts like this from you and me on the Brink, and subscribe and like and make comments about it, because it's still in its infancy. It's still growing and getting bigger and bigger as we speak.
Yeah, that's very true. It's the new media medium. It's the new trendy medium. Joe Rogan is the one that inspired it and kind of made it cool and trendy, and now everybody has an opportunity to create a channel and develop an audience, have a clean message, and have a message clear to their audience. It's very true. It is like the next big media, right?
I'm trying to get two people to be on my podcast and me on theirs. The one is Joe Rogan, and I've been sending information to him. If he's listening, Joe, I want to podcast you. I'll come to Atlanta. You can podcast me. And the other one is my friend that invited me to the Arnolds, and I was ready for him, and again I'm getting ready for them, is Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I've been trying to contact him, and he has not contacted me. And all I can say to him is, Arnold, I'll be back.
Yes.
John, yes. It was a pleasure to have you on my podcast. Obviously, very, very interesting. Let's make sure we stay in touch. And, you know, I will send you my books. This podcast is available to your cast Monday morning. And, you know, the form that you've seen it here. And, yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity to share. And keep up the good work, and good luck at the Arnold next year.
We'll do that. And if you talk to Arnold, tell him I talked to John Brink, and he said, I'll be back.
I'll be back. Yes.
Yeah.
Get on the brink.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, John. Take care.